And we'll move to the last case. Mr. Duncan, we'll give you a chance to go from one set of notes to the other before you come back up. That is Hernandez versus Estrue.
May it please the court, Dana Duncan for Jane Hernandez. This case involves three issues. The second and third involve the treating physician rule and the issue of Ms. Hernandez's obesity as it relates to her overall medical condition. But the first and primary issue is the ALJ's finding that Ms. Hernandez could perform her past relevant work as a produce sorter, and that even if other work is available in the national economy, that she could perform it. This, unlike the previous case, is clear in that counsel specifically asked the vocational expert if her finding regarding the past relevant work was a deviation from the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, and she indicated that it was. This case was tried and remanded by the Appeals Court Counsel once and then remanded and retried it. The VE at that second hearing reviewed a hypothetical question, which was lifting of 20 pounds, 10 pounds frequently, sitting for six, standing for six, which is the standing for 2 out of 8 hours, which exceeds the definition of light, which is 6 hours of standing. Given the hypothetical question, the VE opined that Hernandez could perform her past work as a produce sorter. First, the finding of the ALJ and the testimony of the VE are inconsistent with the definition of light work. As I indicated, 2 hours of standing exceeds the light definition as defined in SSR 83-10. The VE testified at hearing that Hernandez could perform her past work, which is not supported. The ALJ found that the VE could perform that work and that it was not that it would not preclude the claimant's past relevant work as a produce sorter, adding this work should allow a person to alternate between sitting and standing options, and her testimony was consistent with the DOT. Clearly, the DOT said light. The VE confirmed this. The VE said Hernandez could do this job. The issue is whether the finding is sufficient to satisfy this inconsistency with the DOT. So in other words, is the term that the ALJ indicated in his case, this work should allow a person to alternate between sitting and standing options, is that sufficient to meet the burden under SSR 00-4P? That regulation or that ruling does apply because it indicates in its preface that this ruling does apply at both steps 4 and 5 if vocational testimony is used at step 4 as it was here. The ruling states it is the contention of Ms. Hernandez that the ALJ's finding, more specific information about a specific job or occupation, requires more. It does not, the ALJ's finding does not explain the discrepancy, does not provide a basis or even an evaluation for the ALJ where he went in and asked. ALJs in these cases are to do a function-by-function assessment of past relevant work. And by that, they're able to then assess whether this person could or could not perform the past work. There was no function-by-function assessment in this case. He simply asked the VE, is the work consistent with the DOT? She said yes. She just said on cross-examination, no. And then proceeded to, the ALJ simply passed it off based on one brief statement that she made regarding a sit-stand option without any further inquiry. The DOT lists maximum requirements of occupations as generally performed, not the range of requirements of occupation as generally performed, not the range of requirements of a particular job as performed in the specific setting. The DOT, and the reason why the DOT is used, and let me point out, too, that the DOT has everything that is necessary for a determination of occupations, because what is not in the DOT is in the selective characteristics of occupations, the SCO, which goes into detail, including all non-exertional impairments. And so between the two, everything is there except the issue of numbers. So any time a vocational expert should be testifying at these hearings, there should be a simple set of things. Is your testimony consistent? What does the DOT say about the particular occupation you've cited? And if I give you the following, what are the functions of that job? And then please compare those to each other. That would be a simple method that would ensure that the VE's testimony was accurate, complete, and consistent with the DOT. The DOT is designed as the benchmark. Okay, that is where, so that there is consistency. This court in Donahue tried to instill some consistency in VE testimony in Donahue. Prochaska said, well, Donahue was decided before this ruling. We don't need to use Donahue any further to instill this benchmark for reliability. Prochaska takes precedent. And accordingly, that is what is involved. Now, briefly, I just wanted to touch also on the other two points. And that is that in this particular case, the ALJ never took into account her obesity and considered the collective impairments. The law in this circuit is clear that ALJs, when they're assessing cases, are to consider all of the impairments and the impact of them. The ruling that I cited, SSR 021P on obesity, specifically indicates that when you're taking a look at obesity, you have to take a look at how obesity impacts other ailments. For instance, since Ms. Hernandez's primary consideration was asthma, the obesity in and of itself may not be a disabling condition, but it was required to be looked at in light of the two conditions combined. Instead, the ALJ provided no real analysis of that issue. And then lastly, is the issue involving the rejection of the treating physician. And in this particular case, I think that this doctor, again, provided a report based upon his evaluation. He has expertise in this area. He's a pulmonologist. If you apply the rules that are set up, Hofslein, which this court has upheld the issue of the treating physician rule, it seems to imply some sort of a balancing test where you're taking into account all of the factors involved. The balance in the position of Hernandez would lean towards non-exclusion of this testimony or of Dr. Paulson's report. As I indicated, he had been a treater. He had a specific expertise on this particular subject. There was a treatment relationship. He had the file and other records available at his disposal. He had an opportunity to examine the claimant. All those weigh for versus very little in evidence that supports the ALJ's decision to exclude. If there are no questions, I'll reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. And Ms. Miller?
Good morning.
Morning.
Kim Sue Miller, representing the Commissioner of Social Security. May it please the Court. Despite Ms. Hernandez's flurry of allegations, this is a straightforward disability case that was decided at step four of the familiar sequential evaluation. Substantial evidence supports the ALJ's decision that Ms. Hernandez is not entitled to benefits because despite her conditions, including asthma, she remained able to perform her past work as a produce sorter. The ALJ did his job here. He looked at all the evidence before him, and he reasonably found that nonetheless, she was not disabled. He considered that, first of all, she held herself out as being capable of working. When she applied for disability benefits, shortly thereafter, she also applied for unemployment compensation and received it for a year. So she held herself out as being able to work or looking for work at the same time she told the agency that she was disabled from all work. The ALJ also considered that she was noncompliant. Her treating physician noted that she did not take her prescription as she was told to. Furthermore, he encouraged her to stop smoking. Yet, despite her debilitating asthma, she continued to smoke against medical advice. The ALJ also considered her activities, which were inconsistent with debilitating asthma. For example, she spent time in smoky casinos. I think she went to play bingo 2 times a week in smoky casinos, despite her asthma.
She went to what twice a week?
Casinos, a casino,
yeah.
Smoky casino. The ALJ also considered the treating physician opinion of Dr. Schneeberger, who saw Ms. Hernandez and concluded that she could work. He found she had only moderate pulmonary disease and reasonably well-controlled asthma, and his treatment notes document largely normal findings. Notably, Ms. Hernandez actually sought a letter from Dr. Schneeberger stating that she was unable to work, and in fact, he refused. He stated that he did not believe the medical evidence showed she was disabled. Finally, the ALJ also considered the objective medical evidence. Progress notes and test results throughout the record document largely normal results and only mild obstruction.
Did the examiners note the obesity of Ms. Hernandez?
Which examiners, Your Honor?
Did any of the examining physicians note her obesity?
Yes, Your Honor, they did.
Did any of them note any complication with the asthma resulting from the obesity?
They did not. Her treating physician, Dr. Paulson, noted the obesity, did not note any specific complication. Dr. Schneeberger, after him, was the only physician who noted her obesity and encouraged her to lose weight. But he documented no specific limitation stemming from her obesity.
Thank you.
Or that was related to asthma. The treatment notes over the years are all unremarkable for the most part. They just document her lungs were clear. If there was wheezing, it was very fine, and it eventually resolved. There was no ronchi or rails. And pulmonary function studies consistently showed only a moderate obstructive defect. In 2001, her pulmonary function study showed that, 2003, and in 2005. And interestingly, in May 2005, the pulmonary function showed that her lung function was fairly consistent with the study that was done in 2001, showing that she really had her lung function had not declined over the years. Given all this evidence, the ALJ reasonably found that she could perform a range of light work that didn't require sitting for more than 6 hours or standing for 2 hours with appropriate environmental limitations that would accommodate her pulmonary disease. And therefore, she could perform her past work as a produce sorter. Nonetheless, Ms. Hernandez alleges that the ALJ made 3 errors. Although he accommodated her credible, substantiated complaints, Ms. Hernandez contends that the ALJ improperly rejected her treating physician, Dr. Paulson. He opined that she had extreme limitations, such that she could not work full time. The ALJ was
not... Wasn't there some discrepancy between the DOT and how she performed her, allegedly performed her job previously, that she was able to stand and sit at her own discretion rather than only stand most of the time or something like that?
Your Honor, Ms. Hernandez does raise that argument that the DOT conflicts with her ability to perform the produce sorter job. However, the DOT doesn't apply in this case, contrary to what counsel would have us believe. In fact, the job description contained within the DOT doesn't contradict the VE testimony because it's not relevant to the VE testimony. Her ability to return to her past work as a produce sorter as she actually performed it is what was before the VE and was not based on any information in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, but rather as she described it. We have the benefit of her written description of her job as a produce sorter as she actually performed it, both with a sit-stand option, no environmental limitations, and no lifting or carrying required. As she actually described it, there was no need to even turn to the DOT. The court properly, in accordance with regulations, determined that she could perform that job as she had actually performed it. We don't even reach the question of how it's generally performed in the national economy, as described in the DOT. Does that answer your question? In rejecting Dr. Paulson's opinion, the ALJ considered his extreme limitations weren't supported by Dr. Paulson's own limited notes. He was not a pulmonologist. He was an internist. There's nothing in the record to suggest that he was a pulmonologist, nor did he see her 19 times, as Ms. Hernandez claims in her brief. He saw her 4 times over a period of 4 months. And in those notes, he described on 3 separate occasions that her lungs were clear. And in his final visit with her, he noted her improvement. Finally, those limits were also inconsistent with the treating physician, Dr. Schneeberger, who treated her after Dr. Paulson did. He noted and explicitly concluded that she was not disabled from all work. And also, it was inconsistent with her own reports. As you've heard, she continued to smoke. And finally, admitted in April 2005 she had no breathing difficulties, even though she was continuing to smoke and was doing pretty well. Counsel raises the question of her obesity. The ALJ did accommodate and consider Ms. Hernandez's obesity. In his residual functional capacity finding, it addresses, he considered her obesity in combination with her other impairments. He specifically acknowledged obesity in his decision. He questioned her about her weight at the hearing, eliciting testimony that she was 5'4" and 218 pounds. And he specifically noted that there was no reference in the medical record to any specific limitations caused by her obesity. And although many physicians did describe her as obese, only Dr. Schneeberger encouraged her to lose weight, as I mentioned earlier, and even, nonetheless, he considered her capable of working, despite that need to lose weight. Similarly, the structure of the ALJ's decision reflects that he considered her combinations in plural, in combination when he referred to them. Counsel claims that the ALJ erred at step 4 when he found that she could do her produce sorter job as she'd actually performed it. 004P does not apply to this case. The information about the job does not exist in a vacuum. Here we had Ms. Hernandez's own report of how she did the job. The ALJ's RFC finding was based on substantial evidence. Given those limitations that accommodated her credible impairments, she was able to perform that job. In short, the Dictionary of Occupational Titles doesn't purport to describe how Ms. Hernandez did her job. She told us how she did it. Counsel also suggests that a function-by-function analysis should have been conducted. In fact, this is for the first time we heard the argument in the reply brief and here in argument, so that would be waived. But nonetheless, the ALJ did comply with Social Security ruling 96-8P and did consider her physical abilities to sit, stand, lift, and carry throughout the medical evidence as contained in his decision. And furthermore, Ms. Hernandez would have the court impose a new rule asking the court to require an ALJ to ask a subset of questions that would elicit further evidence of any conflicts with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. However, that's certainly outside the scope of a case like this where the DOT doesn't apply. And furthermore, counsel has cited no legal authority for such a rule to be created. The Act provides the agency with the rules and the authority to promulgate those rules regarding the disability program. The agency has done so. And, of course, the ALJ was free to rely on the vocational expert's testimony in bottom line. Finally, of course, counsel was free to ask the vocational expert the very questions he believes would safeguard against errors at the hearing, and he did not. For these reasons and the reasons contained in our brief, we would ask the court to affirm the decision of the commissioner.
Thank you, Ms. Miller.
Thank you.
Mr. Duncan.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be brief. It's been a long morning, I'm sure, for the court. The idea that this doesn't apply or that this ruling does not apply to this case is absurd because you just need to look at the ruling. It states, in the policy interpretation, using occupational information at step 4 and 5. Page 2 of the ruling. We use these publications at step 4 and 5 of the sequential evaluation process. It's and then it goes on to say that if you use the vocational testimony at this step, the VE is to be treated just as if it's at step 5. And the information brought forth and any deviations attested to. The fault also with the obesity issue is that the ALJ put some undue burden on the applicant to establish that obesity causes a set of problems. Obesity is not a vacuum issue, which is why the obesity, which was a listing in the list of impairments for consideration at 3, was done away with and was incorporated in all the other listings of the impairments, because you can't just say obesity causes these conditions. I just briefly note that Jake Long signed a contract with the Dolphins. He's 325 pounds and is making millions of dollars. That he is not obese, does not have restrictions accordingly. Instead, the restrictions are set forth in conjunction with the other conditions, and those are specifically her pulmonary condition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan. And that concludes the docket for the day, and we will be in adjournment.